This is Cap and Jay Hood. Enjoy the show each morning in your Instagrammies. At Cap Jay Hood on Instagram.
This is Chicago's home for sports.
ESPN 1000.
During the break, they honored Jill West one more time. And the San Diego Chicken came out and gave him some flowers. And when he handed the flowers to Joe, Joe was holding just the stems.
How about that? Umpire over 5,000 games. How many games that is? How many hotel rooms that is? How many hotel bars that is?
How many rain delays?
I wonder how many hours of his life he spent sitting in an umpire's room with a rain delay.
How many games that got three innings in, then were called, and didn't count at all?
Right.
That when it gets, he didn't get to count those games for his record-breaking number.
That's a great point.
Yeah.
And Anthony Rizzo was on this station the other day and said to me and to Hoodie, Joe West made the single most important call in the history of the Cubs franchise when he decided to call a rain delay. He said, because without that 17 minutes in 2016 in Game 7 delay, we were not winning. We were mentally fried till Jason Hayward called the meeting. He goes, if Joe West, the crew chief, doesn't pull us off the field, we're not world champs.
And he says to this day, every time that Joe is part of a game that or is umpiring a game, he thanks him before the game starts. I love that.
Exactly. Yeah. And that leads us to Joe West here on Cap Jay Hood on ESPN 1000. Joe, congratulations. I know it's been an amazing week for you and your family. How are you doing today?
I'm overwhelmed with all the outpouring of love from everybody in baseball. I tell people all the time that baseball is a big family, and they don't really realize that the umpires are part of the family till something crazy like this happens. But you're right, Rizzo does say that every time he sees it, he'll just say, greatest rain delay ever. Greatest rain delay. That's all he keeps saying.
Joe, congratulations. Just a remarkable feat over 5,300 games. It's absolutely, when you take a step back from it, just as an observer and as a fan of the game, it's a lot to digest. I can only imagine for you, but you're one of those characters and colorful guys in the game, and it may be combustible for fans. There's maybe like a love-hate relationship, and I'm sure part of that is just lasting so long in the game. But I was on the Zoom the other night that you had the chance to meet the media after the game was over, and I really thoroughly enjoyed it because, you know, the fans don't get to see it, but from the media side, I just saw a man that was truly appreciative of a life in baseball, of those around him, the opportunities that you've been given. And it allowed me to even take a step back and think about the moment for you. And I appreciated that because there have been times, and full disclosure, where I've been like, man, like, what is Joe West doing here? Or what's Joe West doing there? And, you know, you're a human being, and you talked about the outpouring of love and support. What was that like when you rung up the final batter in that game the other night, and that game was put to bed, and you had that opportunity to take a picture with all of the people in your life that were able to go to that game?
Well, that was one of the most wonderful things ever because nobody's supposed to go on the field. Nobody. I mean, they had to get certain protocols to let the chicken go on the field. And it was crazy because of this pandemic, which has really hurt the whole country. But all those people were so excited to be there. There were people there that I played Little League baseball with. There were people there that I met over the years. What was really amazing is there were two people I played football with in college, and one of them brought his kid, and my brother and his family were there, and my wife, she organized all of this stuff, and it was just awesome that we put all that stuff together, and I don't know how they did it, and the people with the White Sox, but here's one thing you don't know. That's the most expensive game I ever worked because I had 127 tickets.
It cost you money to umpire that game.
And under contract, I only get six. So I had to pay for 121 tickets. But it was just a great thing. And I've known the Oak Ridge boys for about 40 years. And they actually called the White White Sox and asked if they could sing the national anthem.
That's pretty cool.
And Mr. Reinsdorf was tickled to death to have him because they have evidently opened this new ballpark.
Yep.
And they sang the last national anthem at the old ballpark. And then Emmylou Harris came and Larry Gatlin came. And there were a couple of Hall of Fame football players, Dave Casper and Paul Krause. And that's another story in itself because the last time I saw those two guys together, we were at a restaurant in Minnesota called Manny's. And we're all sitting around the table about to order dinner. And sure enough, they come over these big menus and everybody got a great big menu except me. The waiter handed me a menu with a spiral thing in the back, a little small menu. So I opened it up and it was in Braille. and of course, all the wait staff started laughing when I said, well, I just ran my finger across the top of the page and I said, I'll have the ribeye medium rare and baked potato. They all start laughing. So it was good to put those two guys back together. And Mark Eaton came from the Utah Jazz. He was there. And of course, I think he might have been the hit of the whole thing because everybody wanted their picture taken with a guy that's 7'4".
So I got to ask you, Joe, because, you know, being an umpire for as long as you've been, and we were Jesse Rogers and I were talking with your wife the other day. She's like, there are people on the radio that were criticizing Joe. I can't handle that. You have dealt with this for 45 years in the game. What is it like to be a guy where you have to take your share of criticism because you're Joe West?
Well, that's if you get in this game thinking you're going to make friends, you're doing the wrong profession. You have to do it because you love the game. And listen, you have disputes all the time in a family. And some of the disputes are, you know, I don't agree with what you did. I don't agree with how you did it, you know. But look at it this way. The former commissioner of baseball flew in for this event, Peter Ubroth. George Bush left a voice message for me. They all appreciated this whole event, and it was a wonderful outpouring of appreciation for the game. You know, I tell people all the time, an umpire's got three responsibilities. His first responsibility is to the game of baseball. And sometimes that might not mean to the commissioner's office, but to the game of baseball, because you're the only official representative on the field to take care of the sport. And your second responsibility is to your profession. And sometimes that might not mean the union. And your third responsibility is to do what you know in your heart is morally honest and correct. And if you do those things in that order, nothing you do out there will be wrong. You may be criticized for it, for what you did, but you're doing it because what you believe in your heart is morally honest and correct. And if you do those things that way, you're going to get criticism. You're going to get bad press. You're going to get people that hate you. But that's part of the job, and you have to understand that when you do this. So I take that criticism kind of like with a grain of salt, and you keep going because you can't let that hurt you, and you can't let that affect the next decision you have.
Obviously, Chicago is a great baseball town, but there hasn't been the greatest baseball played over the course of, you know, 125 or so years. You had the unique opportunity to umpire the 2005 World Series and the 2016 World Series, which are the only two, you know, World Series that Chicago has seen in the last 100 plus years when you do all the math.
I got two World Series rings and two of them have, one of them has the Cubs on it, one of them has the White Sox on it.
I mean, when you think about that, that's 108 years and that's 88 years of just frustration and futility and just, ugh. And the fact that you got to umpire in both of those, give us, we talked about the rain delay moment that Rizzo talks with you every time you guys see each other, but was there a standout moment from each of those World Series where you were able to appreciate it because you were in Chicago?
Well, I think the craziest thing about both of them was that when we went to Cleveland, there were more Cubs fans there than there were Indians fans.
Right.
And it was crazy. It was it was like it was the people in the stands were making it like it was a Cubs home game. That was the thing I noticed most. Of course, the rain delay, if I hadn't been a boater in eastern North Carolina and had a sailboat and a powerboat, I might not have read the radar as well as I did that night, but I did pretty good when they showed us what was coming. And I told the ground crew, I said, you're going to have to take this off and you're going to have to put it back on as quick as we take it off, because we're going to get that blast right there. And then when it's over, we're going to have a little window, but that's going to be about it. And it was amazing. They put that tarp on the field and off the field quicker than they had ever done it in their life. And because they had to, you know, and they were really professional, really good. But a lot of things about the Cubs World Series were amazing, because it didn't matter who won. It was great because both teams in it weren't used to being in the World Series, you know. And the sad part is Cleveland didn't win, and I had Cleveland and the Marlins World Series back in, what, 97?
Mm-hmm.
And they lost there. So if there's another World Series, Cleveland obviously does not want me to be in it.
No doubt. Hey, before we let you go, I got to ask you, the other day Mike Schilt got tossed. That was, I think, Dan Bellino said, hey, I see something on the hat. And then Schilt goes out after the game and says, it's baseball's dirty little secret. What's your stance on all of this? Because you got to be the arbiter that deals with it.
Well, what we were trying to do, I mean, I had Tony La Russa in a game in St. Louis years ago, and I had to kick his pitcher out because of a hat. And I didn't want to have to kick anybody out, because I didn't want to have to kick anybody out when we could correct it before it happened. So I asked him to remove the hat before he threw a pitch. And if anybody should have gotten mad at that, it should have been La Russa, because he could have come out and said that you shouldn't be coaching them. And what I was trying to do was prevent having to kick a ball player out of the game. The players need to play the game so that it's decided on the field between the players. And to have a guy kicked out of a game for an equipment violation, it doesn't help the game at all. And so I made the decision to go and ask him to remove the hat. Just put another hat on and we'll go and nothing. And Schilt got mad. And I think he got mad because he feels like his players aren't doing what he accused the rest of baseball doing. So, but he took it out on me, and that was the wrong guy to take it out on at the time. But I've known Mike Schilt a long time. In fact, we're in a club back in eastern North Carolina called the Professional Baseball Representatives of North Carolina. So, again, like I said, we're all family in this, and sometimes you have an argument with your family. So, it's unique. Over the years, you have to look at this as one of the greatest things. Is you see these people all the time. You see them coming and going. And I have to tell you this cute story. The other day, I saw Delino DeShields go to coach first base for the Reds, and I said, I remember when you came up. And he said, yeah. And I said, I remember when your kid came up. He said, yeah. And I said, you see that guy in right field? He said, yeah. I said, I umpired when his grandfather played. Wow. I had a spring training game one time with Carl Yastrzemski, but I only had him in one game. So I've had fathers and sons and grandfathers and grandsons. So wow. I've been here a little while.
You have. Well, we appreciate you taking time. We're going to eject you so you can get off to Wrigley. And your wife is awesome, and thank you for taking time for us.
Congratulations, Joe. Well,
thanks for having me. It was great talking to you guys.
You
see
too.
You later.
See you later. There he is. That's Joe West. And it's so interesting how he becomes such a trigger for some people. Like, he's the nicest guy in the world.
Yeah, I mean, we didn't bring up Hawk with him, but it's not like that's a secret. Hawk and Joe West were a thing. But because when you have characters of the game, right? Mm-hmm. Like, Hawk was a character of the game. Joe has kind of become a character of the game. When you have two characters kind of getting on top, it becomes like a WWF match or WWE match. So, yeah, I understand the trigger. You know, but part of that is when you get to 45 years in the game, 5,000, almost 400 games, you do become part of the story, whether you like it or not. And I know there are people who despise him, but
Sylvie.
You despise him because he's been he's triggered other people that have brought attention to Joe, meaning like the Hawks or broadcasters or players or managers or whatever. There was a moment particularly on your team where Joe West was involved where you're like, oh man, I hate that guy. And like I said before, like the human side of people, you know, as part of being a storyteller is you really want to humanize these guys. And you know, I can appreciate in a storied career. Like he basically got to live a documentary the other night of this is your life. It was like it's a creepy way to say it was like you're living and this is your wake. You know, like here are all the people that care so much about you that are willing to invest flights and times and take chances during the pandemic and all this stuff to make happen, and you kind of take a step back and see it. It can be overwhelming and very emotional.
All right, 312-332-3776. We've got the Friday folder. You'll love it. Next.
David Kaplan.
Jonathan Hood.
Our new morning show. This is Cap and Jay Hood.
On ESPN 1000.
And the ESPN Chicago app.
I'm going to do my radio show.
Okay.
I work at ESPN.
Yeah.
Because it's Friday.
It's time for the Friday folder.
And you ain't got shit to do.
On the Cap and Jay Hood Show.
Friday folder brought to you by the wonderful people at Apt Electronics in Glenview, ABT. If you've never been, it is literally a college campus of everything you could possibly want.
Just bought a refrigerator from our guys.
There you go.
Yeah.
It's the best.
Looking forward to that purchase.
Yeah.
You know, sometimes the forced purchases are not as fun as the fun, you know?
Right. Like, I'd like that 73-inch TV right there. But
yeah,
sometimes you got to buy a refrigerator, washer, dryer. They got it all. Anyway, time for the Friday folder. Here's Tyler.
All right, let's start with this one. Shohei Ohtani late to the ballpark yesterday. In fact, the entire Angels team late because they were dealing with some traffic heading in to face the A's.
So I was there at the Deerfield Multiplex when Michael Jordan was late for practice. Mm-hmm. This is before they built the Birdo. This is before they put curtains up. Jerry Krause put curtains up so you couldn't see anything. You could only see like the last 2 seconds of practice when they would raise him up.
Yep, been there before.
You've been there. And Michael walked in. Sorry, Doug. Doug was the coach at the time, Collins. Sorry, I'm late. There was an accident. I got caught at a railroad crossing. And Doug's like, no big deal. $500 fine. What? He said, yeah, you should have taken a different route.
Well, Ohtani was on the team bus. Number one, there was an accident on the Bay Bridge, and California traffic. We think Chicago traffic's bad. California is a whole different ballgame, especially when you're talking about L.A. And look, he was scratched from his start. That's the biggest thing here. The best part of the story is that he hopped in a cab back to the hotel to try to still stay on his routine. Madden said he's a routine-oriented guy. 4 o'clock, he needs to be ready to go. And he hopped on the BART, which is the San Francisco version of
Bay Area Rapid Transit.
Yeah, it's basically the L. So you have 6'4". His shoulders are as wide as a desk. 6'4" Shohei Ohtani hops on the BART to get to the game, and even that supposedly he was lost in transit, so they had to scratch him and he DH'd instead. But then the BART got involved. They tweeted that. Yeah, what an honor to have Shohei Ohtani ride the BART. But looking at our systems, we had no delays, which would have disrupted his commute to the ballpark, which I thought was fun. It's just a fun play. Good for the BART for capitalizing that on Twitter.
No
especially
question.
With Shohei Ohtani. Like, if you're talking about MVP candidates, that guy's right
He's
in the mix.
He's a beast.
Yeah.
Tyler.
All right, next up. So a number of NBA fans have been getting banned from arenas. This is what happens when we have been pent up and now people are acting up. When they're getting back into some games this past week.
Okay, so we had a guy lean over and dump popcorn on Russell Westbrook as he came off after spraining his ankle.
Yep.
They lose to the Sixers, and they had to hold Russell Westbrook back. And he said, look, it's not the popcorn. That's assault, man. You wouldn't walk up to him on the street and dump popcorn over him. Because you're at a game, doesn't give you the permission to do that.
It's insane. Like, stop acting like a fool. You know, it's one thing to be able to tweet at these guys and you know, blast them on Twitter or social media or something. It's another thing to act like a fool in public at a sporting event. You should be banned. Quite frankly, for getting indefinitely, just no. Like, you don't get the right to enjoy that privilege anymore, because it is a privilege. And if you don't think it is, take the last 15 months. There's nothing I want. Going to a bar, Cap, and having a sandwich and a beer with you is something that is a privilege. And I didn't know that until the pandemic happened.
No question.
I'll never take that for granted again. And hopefully these fans that are going back, we have 60% capacity at both Wrigley and Guaranteed Rate this weekend. It's a great thing. Enjoy it. There were fights in the stands this week over at Guaranteed Rate. Like, just
dial it back.
Dial it back. Enjoy the game. God, it's ridiculous.
It is. Tyler.
All right. Have you guys seen these new White Sox uniforms, part of the City Connect?
Yeah, so they released it this morning on their website, and I'd been tipped off by Brooks Boyer from the White Sox. Dude, you're going to look at these and go, wow, those are amazing. They say Southside.
Yeah.
They are absolutely awesome, and they have a promo video they just tweeted out on the White Sox Twitter account. It's got Snoop Dogg. It's got Chance wearing it. You see a bunch of the key players. They're awesome.
Well, it's the key. The White Sox logo is like the moment they went to that the White Sox script when they had the new Comiskey Park. In the 90s, like I'm a child of the late 80s and early 90s. It's like the Frank Thomas, the 93-94 White Sox. And you mentioned Snoop Dogg. Like, that was pop culture, man. The White Sox logo was as much of pop culture as any logo in professional sports. They got it right with this City jersey. It's awesome. I mean, it is. I just retweeted it with the fire emoji. I think they nailed it. I mean, so many people criticized the Red Sox version, which I had a problem with because it represented the Boston Marathon. I didn't have a problem with the jersey. I had a problem with the criticism because it was bright yellow and blue. Who cares? Okay? They were honoring the Boston Marathon. This honors the White Sox, the black and the white and the Southside roots and like everything that it means to be a White Sox player and a White Sox fan. I think that they really got this right. And the video is fantastic. The pictures are great. So that's coming up, right? Next week, June 5th, I believe.
Yep. Yeah. So. It is fire. Tyler.
All right. So this, or today actually, 22 Chicago beaches are reopening. Nothing screams beach weather like 50 degrees and raining.
Yeah, so Cap and I set up because we wanted to get there early to have a spot.
Yeah, we have our we stopped and put our chairs out at Oak Street Beach already.
Dibs,
they're there,
right? Like dibs in Chicago. Dibs. We Cap and I, after the alarm and the crap show that happened at his house this morning, we went straight to North Avenue. You said Oak. We went to North Avenue and Oak Street just to make sure we got a spot.
Yeah, yeah. So we have dibs at both places.
So much for all of those that have been clamoring to go to the beach. When you walk outside today, it's like, no, I'd rather just grab a blanket and a cup of coffee.
Yeah, it's just ridiculous. Brutal. But no, now awesome. That we've got the beaches back and a large portion of the pandemic in
smart.
The rearview mirror.
Yeah, just be smart. Have fun, though. Yeah, it's awesome.
Enjoy and have a good time.
Just plenty of seats available this weekend.
All right, Tyler.
All right, have you guys seen this, that if you get a COVID shot at certain places, they'll give you a little gift or something along those lines?
Well, one of
those
like an places, incentive.
Right, yeah, an incentive to get the COVID-19 vaccine. One of those places, if you go to Vegas, you can get your vaccines at strip clubs.
Oh, baby. That's a pretty good incentive.
Have you ever gone to a strip club with your wife?
Oh, we're coming out like aggressive. We're not even. Have you? Yes. The answer to your question is yes.
Yeah, I have too.
So, is there incentive or something? Like, what happens? Where's the follow up?
So, I heard Waddle and Sylvie yesterday. Thought they did a great job with the story. That there was this guy who didn't want to get his shot.
Okay.
And his wife said, "Well, guess what? They're giving out shots at this local gentleman's club. How about we go together to the gentleman's club, and then I can convince you to get the shot?"
And?
He said, in.
Hey, whatever it takes.
Did they have good wings?
Exactly. Magic never, City in Atlanta. See,
you've never had a buffet unless you've had one at a gentleman's club.
Exactly. You go there and get your food at Heavenly Bodies. Remember that place?
I don't know, Cap. Yeah, blacked out.
Exactly. So, yeah, I've gone with my wife. She was getting her master's when we first got married.
Oh man, you're giving me the scene.
And the master's group had two guys that were from a foreign country, and they were going to be moving back there. for arranged marriages.
Mm.
Arranged marriages.
Brutal.
And they said they were celebrating graduation. Mindy, does your husband know of any of the adult clubs in the area?
Yep, yes, the right guy.
Code is Studley. We're fine.
I got you.
And we took them, and he's like, oh, what a great night that was. And then he flew out two or three days later to his arranged marriage.
And got the flu shot on the way out.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
No, I think it's great. I think it's great that they're giving it the, any incentive that people who are having doubts, I'm not going to sit here and say what you should or shouldn't do, but get the vaccine.
All right, 312-332-3776. Frank Isola on D. Rose and the Knicks. Next.
Don't miss the conversation.
Cap and J-Hood.
Tell your smart speaker to play ESPN 1000.
Cap and Hoodie.
Bop, 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 bop.
And listen to Cap and J-Hood at home and in the office.
Now, back to more Cap and J-Hood on Chicago's home for sports. ESPN 1000.
So I was watching the scene, Guff, and Ryan McGuffey's in for Hoodie, who has got a day off. So does Danny. Meller will be in for the midday show. JR and Tyler are here. I'm David Kaplan. It's a Cap J. Hood morning show. So I was watching the scene at Madison Square Garden the other night. And then I saw the scene in Manhattan and throughout New York. People were celebrating like they won the NBA title. They won one first-round game. That's how starved they are for a winner there.
They add us to the mix, too.
No question.
It was also the first time I watched Knicks fans and people from New York, and I didn't get upset about it. Ever. It didn't, like, crawl under my skin like the 1994 or 95 Knicks used to crawl under my skin. It's weird that I felt joy for Knicks fans.
And for Derrick Rose.
Well, that's why. That's why I felt the joy.
He's our guy.
And so is Tibbs, and so is Taj. But it's all about Derrick. It's all about Derek.
I mean, no question. Yeah. So Frank Isola is all over that beat. He's a great friend of ours here on the show, and you see him on TV. So, Frank, I got to ask you, it was one game in the first round. But do you feel like the Knicks are alive and a contender to get, not a title, the top free agents, or there's a long way to go?
I like the fact that you guys pointed out that what do they say about Knicks fans? The most sophisticated, intelligent basketball fans anywhere
are
dancing in the street after one playoff game.
Yeah.
That also was like a 20-year-old, early 30, mostly guys, mostly liquored up crowd. And go ask Trae Young. He'd be the first one to tell you because he faced most of the abuse. But to your point about free agents and things like that, I do think, and I think Tom Thibodeau's got a lot to do with it, I think now when free agents do look at the Knicks, I think they look at it as a more competent franchise. Things are more organized. It's a more viable place to go. Now, the owner is still there, but when you're playing like this and you're winning the way they are this season, finishing fourth, the owner kind of becomes secondary. There hasn't been the dysfunction, which is important. So in a short amount of time, I think Tom, with certainly the help of the players who all bought in, and the Knicks played hard all season long, when a lot of teams weren't playing hard, I think that they've kind of changed the perception of the franchise a little bit.
Frank, go back to Super Bowl Sunday when the Knicks complete the trade for Derrick Rose. What did that trade at that time for that player do for this team?
Well, again, we'll talk about the world's most sophisticated, educated basketball fans. They all hated the move because they all thought that it would somehow slow down the progress of Emmanuel quickly, not realizing that bringing a guy in like Derrick Rose, who Tom has a lot of trust in. Derrick Rose has a lot of trust in Tom. They were with each other in Chicago, Minnesota, and now in New York. I think it's changed a lot about the team because it gave someone who the Knicks late in the game, because they always bring him in off the bench, and in the fourth quarter, Derrick Rose is in there. And Derrick Rose led the Knicks, over 48 minutes in plus-minus. I think he was like a plus-10, which I think was far and away the best on the team. And I think it was important for Tom because, remember, he also brought Taj Gibson back, who was out of work at the time. So bringing in two guys that know him, that young players would look up to, I think it really, really helped the Knicks. And you guys just mentioned it. I mean, 10 years ago, the guy was the MVP of the league, Derrick Rose. And we know he's gone through a lot of stuff on and off the court. You know, 5 years ago when he was in New York, he left the team. He went AWOL. And to see him out there the other night making big play after big play in the fourth quarter and helping the Knicks win their first playoff game since 2013, it really is a pretty remarkable story when you think where Derrick Rose was when the season began, playing, you know, a backup role on one of the worst teams in the league, Detroit, to playing a starring role in a Knick win, a game that the Knicks had to have.
So the scene was awesome. I don't think the Knicks are wildly talented. I think they're incredibly well coached. Where do you see this? What is their ceiling this year?
I think you described it pretty accurately. I think in a league where all, you know, the players agreed to play 72 games, they agreed to a 72-game schedule, but none of these guys really agreed to play 72. You know, look at the Nets, how many games, you know, their three stars played. Jokic was the one guy that did make it through all 72. So not, you know, I felt like a lot of teams didn't play hard all year, and I felt like a lot of stars didn't. I just think that the Knicks, Tom got these guys to play hard every single night, which is the reason they ended up with the fourth-best record. The Miami Heat have more talent than the Knicks, and the Heat finished sixth. I think Atlanta has more talent. Now, they all finished tied, but the fact that the Knicks were in that group and got the four seed. But when you get to the playoffs now, talent is what separates these teams. Look at what the Lakers are going through. With Anthony Davis healthy and LeBron, they have a 2-1 series lead on the Phoenix Suns. I think it'll be difficult for the Knicks to get out of this round. The one break that they will get is that if they were to survive Atlanta, I'd rather play Philadelphia as opposed to playing either the Brooklyn Nets or the Milwaukee Bucks. So I think their second-round opponent, even though Philly finished with the best record in the East, I still think they're the more favorable opponent. So I still think with the Knicks, believe it or not, would have a chance against Philadelphia. They won't have a chance against Brooklyn or Milwaukee. So if the Knicks ever got to a conference finals, that would be a miracle. Getting to a second round, I think that's realistic, and I think you'd have to chalk it up to a really good season.
I can't believe for the first time in my life, I feel like this is a therapy session that I'm admitting I have New York Knicks envy, but a big part of that is because of Tibbs. Just a great coach, well-loved and revered here. Now, it wore out because of, obviously, the style of coach he is and what he's done with the Knicks. He's gotten guys to buy in, as you mentioned. Is his style, is it sustainable over the course of 3, 4, 5 seasons in New York?
Yeah, I think with a lot of coaches, you know, and except in very few instances, I think a lot of guys, it seems like they kind of wear out their welcome. I think it can be just because, you know, you guys were there with Tom his first go-around. So, you know, you're dealing with a lot of stuff you really haven't dealt with, whether it's the media, and you're working really closely with the front office. Now when you have a disgruntled player, it's more, you know, you're not the assistant coach that's going to play the good cop. You're the guy that really has to make the tough calls. And I think he learned to appreciate what he had in Chicago once he went to Minnesota. Because Minnesota is like a weird situation there. You know, they hadn't made the playoffs, what was it, like 12, 13, 14 years. Mm-hmm. Tom gets there. By the second year, they had the third best record in the West. Then Jimmy got hurt. He came back. They made the playoffs. And people in Minnesota talk about it like it was the worst season they ever had to experience. That's because, you know, he actually, you know, put his foot up everyone's behind and made them work hard. And I'm not just talking about the players. And so look at where Minnesota was before Tom got there and since he's left. And I think like a lot of the dysfunction in the organization, I think he realized he had a pretty good thing in Chicago, and it wasn't perfect by any stretch of the imagination. Maybe there was a little paranoia on both sides. I think the fact that he comes to New York and he and Leon Rose have a relationship, they've known each other for 30 years. So I think maybe the trust factor is a little bit better. And I think the fact that Tom knows, you know, once you reach a certain age and you're on your third job, that's not to say that he wouldn't get another job, but I think this is the job that he wants. He loves Chicago. The Bulls, you know, if he left New York, if the Knicks got rid of him tomorrow and the Chicago job were available, you know he'd go sprinting back to Chicago. He loves it. The three cities that he loves the most to coach in would be Boston, Chicago, and certainly New York. So I think he appreciates what he has, and I think he's going to try harder than ever to make it work there.
Hey, man, appreciate your time. Have a great holiday weekend. You're the best.
Thanks, Frank.
All right, boys. Take care. Have a good weekend.
You too. See ya. Frank Isola all over the Knicks situation. So I ask you, Hoodie and I had this discussion yesterday. Do you find yourself, wow, I can't believe, like you just said to him, I'm rooting for the Knicks because I love Tibbs.
Yep.
I love watching what Derek's doing.
Taj Gibson was as eloquent as ever after the game, emotional about what it means to be doing it with Tom, with Derek, in that city.
Do I find myself rooting for them?
Yes.
Absolutely.
100%.
Because here's what, they're not going to win a title. Like, the Knicks winning the title probably doesn't sit as well with me.
Mm-hmm.
But the fact that, like, the Derek story is not finished yet, and mm-hmm. the way he has kind of reinvented himself as a player,
mm-hmm.
because he was trending to be one of the, he's still one of the top athletes that ever walked through this city. He won an MVP. And I love Tibbs. You know Tibbs. I've talked to Tibbs off just, you know, in personal conversations. That guy will hang out with you all day and forget that he's a basketball coach. He's just...
He's awesome.
He's a dude's dude. And then Taj is just one of the classic underdog stories that wasn't supposed to make it, and here he is 13 years later in the NBA and still doing his thing. So credit to... How do you not cheer for that? Especially when in Atlanta. Like, I could care less about Atlanta. I mean, the Knicks are going to get... They're not the most talented team in the East, so it's hard not to see... It's hard not to appreciate what happened the other night. It is...
312-332-3776. We'll talk with Carm for Crosstalk and Trends. It's all coming up next.
Get social with our new morning show. Follow on Twitter at CapJHood.
Cap and J Hood.
Chicago's home for sports.
ESPN 1000.
All right, home stretch of a fun show as we get you ready for Carmen and Yurko show with Meller in for Yurk. And then it's Greeny, and then it's Waddle Sylvie, and then a 30-minute Black and Abdallah leading into Connor McKnight's pregame show on White Sox baseball, White Sox and the Orioles here on the home for the White Sox, ESPN 1000. And download the ESPN Chicago app where you can get all of our podcasts. Carmen DeFalco is in the studio. Hi, Carmen.
Hello, boys.
What up, Carmen?
What up? Good to see Guff in here.
Yeah.
Good job this morning.
Thanks, bud.
We just got done talking to Joe West an hour ago.
Yes, Joe West, yes.
I think we're... Are we
I'm
good?
Not going to be triggered.
Okay, Sylvie.
I just don't want to hear his name anymore.
Are we good? Like,
please end it. Please.
We're good, right? Like this,
please.
We go into a holiday weekend. We start fresh on Tuesday.
You guys had him on. Okay. This has been going on all week. Yep. Can we officially end it? We're done, right?
I want it to be done.
He's doing the Cubs Reds this weekend.
Oh, Jesus.
I mean,
sweet Jesus. I'm going out of town.
Maybe Angel Hernandez can upstage him on the south side.
Yeah, maybe he can, he's got a tendency to do in a bad way. I'm done with it. I don't want to hear about Joe West anymore.
How about him saying he's got World Series rings from 05 and 16?
Kept didn't know rings. That little nugget. Kept didn't know that.
I did not know
that's
that.
That's fabulous.
I wish, you know what, though? He didn't answer. I asked him, give us like a good story from both. Of course, we got the Cubs version. Per usual.
Yeah, just the Cubs version. It is pretty memorable what happened there, you know, with the whole rain delay.
He said time he sees Anthony Rizzo.
You know, the Canerico slam followed by the Pods walk-off had the moment for me.
Nothing.
It was just, no.
Yeah.
He doesn't remember it. It's too many years ago.
Jeff Blum's 13th inning homer. Yeah. Like, that allowed him to Mark Burley's save when he was half in the bag.
He had about a six-pack before he took the mound. Wait, what?
And that's a true story.
Yes,
people
is.
Do not believe when I tell it.
The Burley thing?
Yeah, Burley part.
We just interviewed Burley for Hanging with Her. With Frank interviewed him, and he opened it up a little bit more, saying, you know, he had one or two. He's like, the only thing that's true about it is I had well more than one or two.
Yeah, exactly.
Right.
Yeah. They're like, wait, I got to do what?
Yeah.
Wasn't it one pitch? It was quick.
It was one out.
It was one out for sure.
I think it was a third of an inning, or maybe been two thirds of
it. It was one out. I think you're right.
I think it was three pitches, man.
Yeah. Maybe three pitches.
I remember
Don Cooper telling me. Yeah, he said, here's the true story. He walks up to me. He's in gym shoes. And he says, do you need me tonight? He's like, you just threw a complete game.
Yeah,
no.
I don't think so.
Relax. He goes, good. Great. Thank you. He goes, he's six beers in.
Yeah.
Six! Well. And they look down and they go, it's the 14th inning. Can you throw?
Three pitches.
Yeah. What?
Three pitches. But for Burley, six is like two and a half for the rest of us, right? Country kid, grew up, you know, hunting and fishing. And
I was also told that Mark was pitching in a game at Guaranteed Rate, then U.S. Cellular.
Especially 27-year-old Burley, by the way.
Yeah,
He's gone through the eighth inning. He's going to finish it. He's going to try and get the complete game. He runs off the top of the eighth. He finishes him. He runs off the mound, goes right through the dugout, through the clubhouse, up the back stairs, and he's in a skybox. In the eighth inning.
In the eighth.
His friends are having a bachelor party up there. He hangs with them, and then he looks and goes, up, three outs, I gotta go
back down. Yeah.
He runs back down, back out of the mound, and finishes the complete game.
There won't be another Mark Burley.
No, there won't be. I love him.
He was awesome.
Yeah, I love him.
Any trends you like this weekend?
I mean, there's always trends, you know. We got
Guff first... and I don't like to gamble, but
no, I know. Well, you guys know. So last weekend in the NBA, it was all about the underdogs. Going back to last Friday night, that last play-in game where Memphis won on the road as an underdog, won straight up, covered the spread, obviously. So last weekend, the dogs went 7-2 with five straight up wins since Monday through last night. The dogs haven't done very well. The favorites have bounced back to go 9-2 against the number. And one favorite I like tonight, the Atlanta Hawks back home, even though that's a 1-1 series. This is the largest point spread of the series so far. But I like Atlanta. You know, they have the longest active winning streak in the NBA at home. The Knicks offense is just tough to trust right now. You're relying on Derek to do a lot of heavy lifting. They haven't shot the ball well from distance, and their efficiency in the first two games offensively has been horrid. 103 points per 100 possession, guys. That's down over 5 points per 100 possessions from what they were in the regular season, and it's not like they're a very efficient offense anyway. They were 22nd in the NBA during the regular
season. So what's the number tonight?
It is 4, and I like the Hawks tonight. Maybe the under 2. I mean, this is a small total for today's NBA. Yep. Even a playoff game. 211. That's a small total. Series has averaged only 202.5 so far, though. We know how the Knicks like to kind of junk it up and slow it down and play defense. Maybe you look at the under 2, but I like the Atlanta Hawks to bounce back, especially with how well they've played at home under Nate McMillan. So.
All right. I had the under in the Laker game, which won yesterday. But
that,
I also
all
had,
three, I think, right? So yeah. Far in that series, I think the under's come in all three, hasn't it?
I think it has. And I had, though, Giannis over 28.5.
Yeah.
No. Close.
I mean, that was what a game. How they won game one, I'll never know, but they did. And now they've just stretched their legs. I mean, Jrue Holiday was terrific last night.
They look really good.
So much better than Miami.
Middleton's a beast.
He's a beast, but he's good. Giannis is the beast. And Jrue Holiday makes a world of difference for that. The upgrade that they have from Eric Bledsoe to Jrue Holiday
is massive.
It makes a huge difference. I totally agree. It's massive.
All right, and baseball-wise, anything else?
Oh, gosh, baseball, I got a few things. Let's see, what's the best thing I could give you for baseball? I kind of like the Blue Jays as a road favorite today against the Indians. A young kid making his first start in Cleveland, makes his big league debut. But I'll go with the Hinju Ryu, lefty versus the Indians trend here, because the Indians don't hit lefties all that well. They're bottom six in baseball and batting average and in weighted runs created plus against lefties. Ryu's been much better at home than he has on the road. I still kind of like the Blue Jays as a road favorite tonight. Oh, and then we got Game 7. Do I have time for one more? We got Game 7, one NHL game tonight, guys. Wild in Vegas against the Golden Knights. I don't know how the Wild won Game 5, but they did. Then they went back home. They won Game 6. For the third straight year, Vegas has blown a 3-1 series lead to go to a Game 7. 2 years ago, they beat the Sharks. Last year, they lost. I think I have that right. But they've lost one. They've won one. I like the Golden Knights tonight back home. I'll go with the experience with the goaltender, and I will go with the fact that they really had Marc-Andre Fleury, yeah. Mm-hmm. They really had the better of the play in Games 5 and 6, certainly in Game 5. But hockey's goofy. You never know, but I like the home team tonight.
I'm over here silent because I'm just getting my plays in. That's what I'm doing.
Get them all in. Let's make it a clean sweep.
Well, I don't sleep on the Clippers money line tonight. That's what I'm on.
Clippers money line.
Yeah, yeah.
About that.
Yeah.
I'm with Guff on that. There's one to, as much like we spent all day. What was that Wednesday? Salivating over Luka Doncic, and rightfully so. Mm-hmm. He's phenomenal. There's one disturbing thing, and if you break down the numbers in that series. The Mavericks have shot 35 of 70 from three. Now, I don't know if you guys are math majors, but that's 50%.
That's pretty good.
All right, that's 50%. That's pretty good.
Yeah.
Regular season, they were about 36%. They were 18th in the NBA, so about middle of the pack. It's hard to imagine that can continue. And really, the Clippers have been, offensively, it hasn't been their problem. It's been the hot shooting of Dallas and stopping Luka. A few tweaks, a few missed threes. And I think Guff's onto something there. You know, they're the favorite.
Yeah.
Even though they're going on the road and they're up, they're down 0-2. They're still a 2-point favorite.
They're begging you to pound the Mavs.
Yeah.
Let's go with the Clips.
I'm kind of with Guff on that, too. I don't disagree there. I think the Clippers are the live dog tonight.
All right. We'll crosstalk with Carmen and Meller
in 2 minutes.
Plus.